Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, February 28th, and this is Jeff Dunphy coming to you from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. We've seen all kinds of things happen over this last little bit. The show is called Retooling for Our Coming of Age, and it speaks on how we might lose the antiquated modality and methodology by which we have been encumbered historically, and how we might move forward using a bit of a new approach, new eyes, new ears. The masters have often written, for those with eyes to see and ears to hear, and oftentimes as we read and as we study the ancient teaching and the ancient philosophy, we come to a place that we step over the realm of mere understanding, and we come to the point of realization. And this is one of the things that happens when the mere understanding is an intellectual approach, and the aspect of realization is far higher in terms of abstract, and it is into the bigger and higher mental body, the upper manas, is as it is called in Sanskrit. Now, I will do a quick and brief review of the planets right now in terms of the demise, let's trust, the demise of greed running everything. And right now what we're seeing is greed running amok, and a whole bunch of people pointing out that there are all kinds of things happening that make everybody shake their head. No doubt you've heard that the Ukraine is completely and utterly going through chaos right now, and I suspect there will be further calamity in that part of the world. I suspect, as we have always known, in terms of the deep state, if you will, that there are countries that are being organized and changed and shifted. And there are individuals behind all of these that give the direction on how things are happening. We're seeing the stock market and the gold market. Gold has increased in value by the better part of $100 an ounce in the last little bit. And we still are diligent believers in the importance of owning gold. We are now at the end of February. It's the 28th of February today, and we are coming, the light is starting to come on. So the metaphor in this is the dark winter is over, even though in Calgary it is very cold outside. The dark winter is coming to an end. The darkness of the winter is coming to an end in the northern hemisphere. And let us hope that this year brings a little more light into things. Now I want to chat a little today about a book that was written many years ago by a young man, and he was all of 13 when this was conveyed to him by one of the masters named Morya. Now, Morya chatted with and taught a young man named Krishnamurti, and this I want to wander through his book, and the book is called At the Feet of the Master, because it talks to and it speaks of gracious, gentle truths, and it gives us a wee bit of a recipe, if you will, on how to accommodate an alignment with the bigger picture. As we go through this calamity in the world, as military scenarios happen, which is what we chatted about previously, as economic debacles are in the throes of happening, as things happen, it is always best to remind ourselves and to review the simple teachings that the masters have passed along forever. Now, one of the first, there's three or four things that we're going to talk about today that are in this book. The first is about discrimination. The second is desire. The third is good conduct. And the fourth is love. So now let's wander through discrimination, and let's chat a little about what the great Master Morya has taught Krishnamurti and what Krishnamurti has conveyed to us. There are two kinds of people, and there are those who know God's plan for human evolution and those who do not. Those who are awake to the law of periodicity, the law of cycles, and those who are not. We are all one, and this is the first step in knowing that neither creed, religion, race, or gender matter, only one's service to all. It's a big thing. There are those who blindly accept direction given by either governments, certainly now in the Ukraine, they're taking orders from the military on one side or the other, and the governments or those ruling bodies. We are also given the premise that the ruling bodies of today will not be the ruling bodies of tomorrow as everybody starts to wake up. Man and his body are separate. What the body wants is not necessarily what the man wants. And one must think long and hard at what the body wants. For the man, that aspect of you that is in your body is a God in the making, as we've been told over and over and over. And not necessarily what your body wants is what the man God, wants. Let us keep the man, the body must be pure and clean in order to facilitate what it is about to do. We talk about retooling, and these are the retooling modality speaks to the mental approach of what we're doing and how we facilitate mental acuity and mental rigor and how we allow it to manifest in all of our bodies. Now let's chat a little about the bodies. We have, just like we have seven holes in our head, just like we have seven chakras in our body, just as we have 7 days of the week, just as we have seven notes in the scale, just as we have seven colors in the rainbow, man has seven bodies. The first is the physical, which for the longest of times has been the only one that's been given any credence or any validity merely because we can see it. We are now changing. Things are now changing in an aspect of knowing that the physical body is not just the only body. The next body that is affiliated with our physical body is called the etheric body. Now, the etheric body is closely related to and hangs around, if you will, the physical body. And we are told that the etheric body, this is the etheric body might be the edge of somebody's aura. Or in Kirlian photography, you will be able to see somebody's aura or somebody's etheric body, as this methodology of taking a picture will show you the glow around a body. We have heard of phantom pains when somebody, an amputee, a person who's lost a limb, is feeling a sore foot or an itchy knee when in fact they don't even have a leg. And we've also seen when you take a Kirlian picture of a leaf and you tear a corner or you tear a chunk out of it, you take another picture after that chunk has been taken out of it and you will see the whole leaf in the Kirlian photography. So you must know your different bodies, the physical or the physical etheric. The next body is called the emotional body or the astral body. And this is followed by the lower mental body, which we would liken to our intellect, if you will. The next body is the higher mental body. This is higher manas, and this is the abstract aspect of our body, of our physiology that manifests itself in seven ways. The next body above that is called your buddhic body. And the body above that is called your atmic body. There's seven bodies, the physical, the etheric, the astral, the lower mental, the higher mental, the buddhic, and the atmic. Now the quest and the aspect of human evolution and where we are in human evolution speaks to a civilization as is ours now that is doing its work on the bridging of the lower body, lower mental body, to the higher mental body. In Sanskrit terms, the building of the bridge is called the building of the Antakarana. We also make reference to this as the rainbow bridge. And so we see in conventional music, there's a wonderful song called Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And consequently, it speaks esoterically of the bridge that we build and the place that we go in the normal course of our evolution. Now, part of man's evolution is evolving so that we can join our lower and our mental bodies so that we can more appropriately and we can more fastidiously connect those so we can listen to the higher realms. We can become better plugged into the higher realms. We must know the difference between these two bodies and when they are speaking and when the real or higher self is speaking. Oftentimes we've heard the cliche, if you will, of the you aren't a physical body having a spiritual experience, but you are in fact a spiritual individual having a physical experience. Or as somebody once wrote about dying, when you die, as we know, you do not die. There is no such thing as death. It merely is a stage of your development. And you come in and out of your bodies much like actors come in and out of their costumes for plays. But as you die, it's akin to taking off a tight shoe. And consequently, when we do the work that we do and when we wake up to things, we can become conscious as we leave our bodies at night to dream. And we can become conscious in the astral realm. So in keeping with the master's direction as things evolve, we can be actively service. We can be providing active service 24 hours of the day, even when our physical body is resting. Your mental body will help you to remember the things that you want and not necessarily the master's work. The mental body, the intellect, we have a saying called the brain will tell you what is possible and the heart will tell you what's appropriate. And I think what has happened is that the intellect, that high aspect of the personality resides in the lower four bodies, the physical, the etheric, the astral, and the lower mental. That's where the personality resides. And the personality is influenced by the intellect. And consequently, we see throughout time when the intellect of mankind runs amok without it connecting itself to the heart or to the higher planes, the buddhic, the higher mental, and the atmic. You must organize your life according to natural laws, as we carry on in the aspect of discrimination. You must be firm where right and wrong are concerned. There are lots of natural laws. However, the laws of Mother Nature are the most brilliant example of how laws work. The laws of cycles. Here we go in terms of just chatting about the seasons changing. Winter is coming to an end soon. In fact, in three whole weeks, we will see the spring equinox on the 21st of March. Now, in Calgary, it doesn't necessarily arrive in March, but in various places, spring does happen in that regard. And that is also the point in time where day and night in the Northern Hemisphere are the same length of time. Daylight and night time are the same length of time, 12 hours. Another point that Moria shares with us is the learning to distinguish the useful from the useless, and the more useful from the less useful. And this is an incredibly important point in conventional society. We oftentimes have, what's the phrase, we have vegetated, we go to veg in front of the television. We go and vegetate in front of the television. We turn our brain off. And consequently, it is a complete and utter misuse of time and energy as well, because you are feeding an aspect. Now, that's given that the television program that you're engaged in is mindless, which many, if not most, are. However, when you recognize that you need to be able to distinguish the useful from the useless, and the more useful from the less useful, you are more discriminating in your time allocation. Can we, I don't know what the number is, but it is hours and hours and hours a day that conventional society watches the Idiot Box. There's a reason it's called the Idiot Box. The other thing that Moria talks about and passes along is the learning to discriminate in what you choose to study and being patient in your studies and learning to be able to discriminate between the erroneous information and understanding that erroneous information, information that is passed down from various places, is incredibly useless. And it's hardly worth your time or effort to facilitate, to entertain it. Why waste your time? Talks about truthfulness in your thoughts, words, and deeds. Simple in its declaration, difficult in its practice, as I suspect many will verify. It is not easy to live a life based entirely on truthfulness, based entirely on thoughtfulness, based entirely on your deeds. It is a challenging task. However, it is the lonely path of the spiritual warrior in order to facilitate these things. Removing yourself from mass mind thinking. This is something that we propagate on this program. This is something that we propagate on this podcast. Mass mind, mainstream media, have an agenda, and that agenda has nothing to do with your well-being. What is quite interesting and quite shocking indeed is that mainstream media, we have this calamity going on in Venezuela, and I think the Ukraine is getting some airplay, if you will, but we have a massive upset going on in Venezuela, and nobody was talking about it. None of the mainstream media had even picked it up. And consequently, this is where the internet presents itself, and this is where our various programs of those people choosing to turn the lights on, if you will, choosing to retool the mental body of the earth. Merely because we've just discussed the seven bodies that man has, guess what? The bodies of earth are the same. And this is the law of correspondence, as above, so below, and as below, so above. So the mental body of the planet needs enlightening. The mental body of the planet needs love and care, tender loving care. Removing yourself from mass mind thinking is unbelievably important because these memes, we call them M-E-M-E, these memes oftentimes are incredibly disruptive and incredibly regressive. They move us away from our evolution, away from the normal course of our evolution. They slow it down because in keeping with the law of free will, what has happened historically is that the powers that be, let me rephrase that, the misaligned powers that be, the dark energy, dark-minded, selfish powers that be, act in a way where they manipulate mass media and mass mind, mainstream media, in a fashion that takes you away from your presence, takes you away from your enlightened heritage. And consequently, this is the memes are viral thought forms. And this is where we have all kinds of memes floating around. And I'm sure you can think of innumerous memes. We have that the government will take care of you. Ha ha. The government will provide for you in your old age. Ha ha. The government will take care of your health. The government will take care of your sovereignty. You know, a whole bunch of nonsense that floats around out there. I don't suspect the government has much longer to survive as the earth and the planet itself is going through the calamity that it is in the throes of going through. Removing yourself from that thinking turning on the lights brightly enough to see what is, not what you want to see. Do not project your thoughts on how they are feeling. Do not project your thoughts on others. Do not assume. Do not make assumptions. Again, the old saying is, when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. The projection of thoughts oftentimes is incredibly detrimental, and it's something that we want to stay away from. The other thing that Maurya taught Krishnamurti back in the days was, you must never do or say what you can never imagine the master doing or saying. There is an aspect of the law of hierarchy where those masters who are on the planet today and who shepherd it into the light, into its normal course of evolution, we have a great appreciation for them, and we are part of the plan, the big plan. And the masters acting and doing and saying, they act and do and say with grace, with kindness, and with mindfulness. So one of the things he passed along to Krishnamurti was, never act in a manner that you could not imagine the master acting in. Being able to discriminate between selfishness and unselfishness, for it has many forms. The aspect of altruism and the aspect of selfishness are, there's gray area in here. And there is a very simple declaration of being, the aspect of selflessness, if taken selfishly, can create what is sociologically termed martyrdom, you know, or self-flagellation. That is not what they were suggesting. He was suggesting diligent discrimination between selfish, being selfish, and being selfless. Learn and understand and graciously recognize to see the divine in everyone. Learning to love and learning to love all, even the most evil. I have a priest friend of mine that we have lovely conversations every now and again, and one of the things that he says, and is bandied around a bunch too, and that was, even Hitler went to heaven. And that is an aspect of being able to love the most evil. It's easy to love somebody who's lovable. It is desperately challenging to love somebody who is unlovable. And that is the task, and certainly that is how the masters operate. And it is something that we, as a race, will soon come to learn more and more about. Now, we're going to chat a little about desire as Maurya passed along, and we're going to talk a little about one of the aspects in this book is talking about desirelessness. How can you be without desire? And this is one of the teachings of Buddha, is destroy desire, eliminate desire. And an interesting Buddhic tactic that has happened in some individuals' misspent youth is, you destroy desire, destroying desire for sensation. And then when you've destroyed desire for sensation and you destroy the desire to destroy desire, which kind of sounds like you're chasing your own tail. However, nonetheless, it's very valid being able to destroy desire. Desire is, and attachment is, what brings great hardship to humanity, great hardship to individuals, and it is through the extrication of your desire that you free yourself. And desirelessness is difficult to attain, as it holds many traps. One must not fall into the trap of desiring no possession simply for the sake of reaching heaven. For desiring heaven is a desire. The loftiness of the desire matters not. Again, the interesting aspect of this is, okay, I can do without a car, or I can do without wanting a car, or a bicycle, or a mode of transportation but for I need a car in order to get around. It isn't so much that you are to go without, it is that you are to become unattached to those things that you desire. And so there's differentiation and discrimination in that. The other thing, we talk about the three pillars of spiritual growth, and they are study, the study of the ancient teachings, whether it's Plato or Socrates, Saint Germain, whether it's the holy books, the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, whether it is or the Upanishads, whether it is the teachings of Alice Bailey with Dwal Kul or Saint Germain or Geraldine Innocente, whether it's these various things, whether it's studying Taoism, the study of the ancient teachings, Plato, Pythagoras, Kuthumi. The other pillar of this is meditation. Meditation is that act which extricates yourself from identification with your thoughts. It is a methodology where you can extricate yourself from your thoughts. Now, some find meditation difficult and some find it quite easy. However, it is an absolute necessity for one's evolution, one's proper evolution, being able to listen to the higher bodies. And the other is service. And service takes many forms. And interestingly, you can be of service to your God self by the meditation and by the study. You can be of service to others by teaching them how to turn on the lights, which is what we do in terms of the retooling. And you can be of service in all kinds of aspects, the way you live your life, the way you provide for others, the way you provide for yourself in all your thoughts, words, and deeds. You must not desire the outcomes of your service or gratitude for your service as well, to be able to be of service without expectation of reward. Another big thing, right? You just must do right for the sake of right, not for the want or of reward. And Gandhi wrote something to this effect, and it was, it's not your place to figure out what your right actions will result in. It's merely your place to do the right thing, to act in the right way. Because the result of your actions may not be felt for a minute, an hour, a day, a year, a decade, 100 years. But according to the law of karma, all good deeds are energetic expressions of things, and they all accrue to you, just as bad deeds accrue to you. It is a mere fact. It is part of the law. You must give yourself to the service of the world because you love it and all in it. Another little simple thing that is far more difficult than meets the eye. How is it easy to love a little puppy, yet how difficult is it to love a despot or a thief or a robber or somebody who's desperately misaligned? The other thing he wrote about is having no desire for psychic powers. They will come when it is time, and the master decides when you are ready. Do not rush their arrival, for their potential to be misused or hijacked are very high. As we evolve, as we move through our evolution, as we wake up, as we perform these three aspects of our development, meditation, study, and service, we develop what we call our clairs. The clairs are clairsentience, clairaudience, and clairvoyance. Being able to see things that the eyes cannot see, being able to hear things that the ears cannot hear, and being able to sense or feel what the physical body doesn't necessarily sense or feel. In accordance with your development, these clair senses develop in due time. However, having them when you're not ready is a challenge. And as we develop and as we do our work and as we do our study, they present themselves to you. Everybody has the capacity to be clairvoyant, clairaudient, and clairsentient. Be ever mindful of speaking when what you have to say is not true, kind, or helpful. The old adage that our parents have passed along, if you don't have anything nice to say, then don't say anything at all. Criticism, condemnation, finding fault is an unbelievably easy thing to do. It takes no brains, it takes no mind, it takes no effort whatsoever to find fault and to be critical. The antithesis is you have to be very present to find some good in everything that you see, even if the knowledge that something bad is happening, the declaration that by and in this world that we live in of duality, when anything nasty or bad or horrible is happening, it is by the very nature of this realm of duality, something wonderful and nice and enlightened is happening on the other end of that spectrum. It is a function of the realm of duality. Do not gossip and do not meddle in another man's affairs. You have no right to talk about or judge another's right to exercise their free speech, free thought, or opinion. The old aspect of minding your own business. Giving yourself to the service of the world because you love it and all who are in it. Unless you are protecting a child or an animal, mind your own business. Mind your own business. Practice the virtue of silence. The art of meditation is finding the silence, and it's spoken of as the voice of the silence. And in fact, Helena Blavatsky wrote a book called The Voice of the Silence, and it talks about the art of getting quiet. The art of getting quiet. In the training that some have done over the last 20 or 30 years, there was an aspect of the training where the individual was asked to go for a walk for 1 hour each day, and in your walk to say nothing. I have a good friend who walked the trail in Spain, and he had little cards that he wrote because he walked it entirely in silence, and he had the little cards made out, so he in Spanish and in Italian and in German and in English and in French, where he merely passed along this card as he walked. He walked for days and days and days and days in silence. A pretty interesting task, a pretty interesting exercise. Now let's chat a little bit more about the book, and that is Good Conduct. Part 3 of the book. Self-control of the mind. One must learn through desirelessness how to control the astral body. This pertains to remaining calm at all times and learning that sicknesses and drama, which the Sanskrit word for drama is called maya, that occur in everyday life, don't matter. The maya of upset, the maya of the emotional calamity, the predisposition of people to be dramatic or to be caught up in the nonsense is a very interesting predisposition. We heard and we make reference to drama queens. And consequently, as you get wiser and as you get more quiet, you recognize how useless and what an unbelievable expenditure of energy it is. We have lots of things to spend our energy on. Let us not be so mindless as to spend it on stuff that is useless. Back to the old useless and useful context. You also must keep in mind and remember that occurrences happening now very well could be from your past lives, and you cannot alter them. However, what you do now affects your next life, and you must remain serene and joyous in all situations. It's a great aspect, and this again is the law of karma. Do unto others. There is a lovely aspect of doing unto others and the understanding of it that a child would argue, yes, but they're being mean to me, so that means they want me to be mean back. It's amazing how the intellect can take things, spin them around, and orchestrate them for their own good, for their own uses, not necessarily for their own good. The other thing that he writes is, be very mindful that you do not allow yourself to feel sad or depressed. And you actually, one of the secrets of the ancient teachings and the ancient school is being able to take an upset or a sadness or a depression and shake it off instantly. And you shake it off instantly by the exact antithesis of what the sadness or the depression is, by turning around and focusing on and giving energy to and vivifying happiness and kindness and joy. And that's how you get rid of it. Interestingly, we have in this great world that we live in, we have an enormous amount of depression, and we also have an enormous amount of people addicted to medication that dumbs them down. How about thickens them up? For those who have mild clairvoyance, you can see people who are on antidepressants. You can see it looks as if they have a black cloud around them, because antidepressants compromise the normal brain chemistry. And so, as some have said, what it does is it takes away all the highs and all the lows, and you sort of get stuck in the middle. Now, it is not to say that true aspects of medication aren't helpful in some circumstances. I just know that we are a society that is overwrought with over-prescribing all kinds of things in order to facilitate something that may not be necessary. Be in control of your thoughts. And be focused on what you're doing so that you can complete it perfectly. There's another simple thing, isn't it? We chat in school, we chat in the world, and we chat in the ancient and in the mystery schools about attention and how important attention is. Attention is to your mind what a laser beam is to diffuse light. When it is focused, it can do great things, and it generates great power. Your attention and how you choose to align it, how you choose to direct it, is incredibly important. So much so that it is one of the mainstays of the mystery school, paying attention. When your mind is free, unencumbered by desires, unencumbered by useless thinking, use your thoughts to pour light and love unto others. Use your thoughts for good. There is an activation energy that we speak of often, in that you can shift levels, and this is where the earth is coming right now. It's going through its own aspect of initiation, just as everybody on it is as well. And in this aspect of initiation, it will shift and rise in its evolutionary process. According to the law of cycles, this is in fact what is happening. We do not go from more evolved to less evolved. We are constantly evolving. We are constantly moving forward. Some are a little slower than others. However, in the grand scheme of reincarnation, we don't come back as a horse, as some people would like to delude themselves into thinking. There's only one way for evolution, and it is forward. Self-control of action. If your thoughts are in order, then your actions will also be in order. Remember that all good thoughts must result in action, not in laziness, for it is in your action that you are in service. We have spoken in the past, perhaps, about how it is less useful now for you to go and park yourself in a monastery somewhere and meditate and pray, where you, as those who have eyes to see and ears to hear, are able to help. And consequently, the being able to help, responding to your ability to turn the lights on, comes through action. Comes through action. Tolerance. You must have and feel tolerance for all, regardless of their belief system. You must not interfere with their ceremonies, as they must not interfere with your truth. I remember being in Egypt years ago when our teacher made mention to the prayers five times daily in Egypt. And one night out under the stars, she very graciously said, "This is their way of honoring God. Tolerance for all, regardless of their belief systems. All religions are paths to a higher calling. You must be tolerant of all, because to help all, you must know and understand all. This is their call to God. This is how they honor God. While some may be caught up in the religion and it wears them, rather than them acknowledging or recognizing it as a path to something higher, the aspect of tolerance is incredibly important. Cheerfulness speaks of cheerfulness. As you bear your karma, cheerfulness must be the rule. As the seeker or aspirant, all that you possess may be taken from you, your favorite possessions, your favorite people, and you must not fall into depression. You must remain cheerful, seeing your karma as an honor to behold. Kind of talks about the book of Job, does it not? Where Job was tried. He was tried by having everything he held dear taken from him. Interestingly, we will see many, many, many things taken from us over this next period of time. And it may not be pleasant or pretty at the time, but it leads to, and it will enter us into, an entirely new time. A new time, a new era, a new stage of our development. Pain is a necessary progress, a necessary aspect of our progress. And it is a vital part of our evolution. And all, to evolve, all must experience pain of one sort or another. One-pointedness, this falls back into attentiveness, doesn't it? Attention, one-pointedness. Nothing shall take your attention away, not even for a moment, from the path of retooling, the path of coming to know thyself. Nothing shall take your attention away from it. No worldly possessions or affections or temptations must ever draw you aside. Stick-to-itiveness, I probably have not spoken of it recently, but stick-to-itiveness was a phrase that my parents used. It's kind of an interesting phrase. Confidence. You must trust yourself. You must trust the hierarchy, and you must trust your master. Your will to continue to walk on the path must be like tempered steel. Be confident. Confidence is vital and important. Say to yourself, what man has done, man can do. I am a man, but also God in man. I can do this thing, and I will. Acting in confidence. You are all gods in the making. Know this. 'Tis a simple fact. 'Tis a simple truth. And finally, we come to love. This solar system is ruled by the ray of love wisdom. This is the second ray. Oh, by the way, there are seven rays as well. Three rays of aspect four rays of attribute. We will cover those in a different time. Love is the most important quality of the aspirant. Without it, the other qualifications matter not, but with it, the other qualifications come more easily. And he also spoke about the three sins against love, which are gossiping, superstition, and cruelty. You must never speak badly of another, for by doing so, you are not only sending evil thoughts to that individual, but also sending out evil thoughts in your neighborhood instead of spreading good thoughts. Energy follows thought. Now, I want to share with you a little story about a woman who was feeling a bit remorseful about her idle chit-chat, her idle gossip, and she went to see her rabbi. And she said, "Rabbi, I've been feeling very badly about the gossiping that I've been doing, and I'm wondering if I might have some words of comfort." And he said, "Yes, absolutely, but first I'd like you to go down to the market and buy a chicken, and then come back up to the synagogue. And after you buy it, I want you to pluck it on the way here." She said, "Very well." So she bought the chicken and she started pulling the feathers out of it, plucking the chicken and tossing the feathers here and there. And as she arrived, she had the chicken fully plucked. And the rabbi said, "Now, I want you to go and gather up all those feathers." And she said, "But the wind has blown them and scattered them everywhere. That will be impossible." And he said, "Ah, just as gossip is impossible to round up once you have started that ball rolling, so too you see these feathers blowing in the wind. You know not where. Be ever mindful that gossiping is incredibly detrimental to and a sin against love." Superstition. Superstition causes ones to believe things that are untrue. It causes ones to think things that are untrue. Superstition or dogma or predispositions towards things that are propagated on us by mass mind are incredibly conflicted with love. And the last is cruelty. Intentional cruelty is the most evil sin of all and is the work of the most misaligned. It's not the work of a true man or a true God. Unintentional cruelty is the product of thoughtlessness and carelessness. You can prevent yourself from being unintentionally cruel by always carefully considering the consequences of your actions. Mindfulness, thoughtfulness. And there we have it, ladies and gentlemen, a brief outline of the book called At the Feet of the Master, a gracious little honoring that Krishnamurti wrote when he was but a young boy, sitting at the feet of his master, Maurya. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to bid you adieu until next week. This is Jeff Dunphy. It's Friday, February 28th, and you've been listening to Retooling for Our Coming of Age. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.